This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread, the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a whole lot of curiosity. I'm your host, Lo Yi-Jun, a food writer and recipe developer from the Jun and Tonic blog. Every week on this show, we explore a particular dish, ingredient, or culinary story, and I bring in some food friends and experts to feed our bellies and minds. Now, today's episode is a bit special. It's quite a bit special because we have a really special guest in the studio with us today. She's a superstar chef that hails from Ipoh. She's the writer of the stunning cookbook titled Malaysia Recipes from a Family Kitchen. She's a mother of two, and she's perhaps best known for winning the 2014 edition of MasterChef UK by serving our national dish of nasi lemak. It's Ping Coombs. Thanks for coming onto the show today, Ping.
Hi, thank you for having me, Jun.
So you've been back in Malaysia for 2 weeks now?
No, I have been back from Malaysia for about 4 weeks.
Oh, 4 weeks?
Yeah,
oh,
four weeks of pure eating.
Oh, wow. So what have you eaten recently? I heard you went on a Sabah trip.
Yes. So mainly this trip to be back is to see my parents. We managed to go to Sabah and Sarawak. Actually, I was very fortunate to be able to go there because I wanted to discover a lot more about Sabah and Sarawak. And I'm afraid to say at my age, I haven't been, and I'm actually quite embarrassed about it. But I'm so grateful that I was able to explore the rich food and culture of Sabah and Sarawak, and it opens my eyes to so many possibilities out there.
Mm. And I think to the rest of the world or to the international food community, you're known as, I guess first and foremost, you became sort of famous from your MasterChef win in 2014. And you're very known for cooking and promoting Malaysian food, Malaysian dishes, right? Do you think that what has your Sabah trip changed about the way you cook?
I don't think it will change like my main sort of like cooking, but it inspired me on the amount of ingredients that they have there. As a chef, you want to go and eat and maybe learn about different ingredients and culture because it then inspire you on your dishes. And when I wrote Malaysia, a fan actually emailed me and said, "I love your cookbook, but you haven't touched upon the cuisine of Sabah and Sarawak." So she felt that naming it Malaysia might not, you know, incorporate Sabah and Sarawak, which I agree with her. I wholeheartedly agree with her. When I wrote the book, I wanted to write a book about Malaysian food that I love and know, which that's why it's called Recipes from a Family Kitchen, because that's what I love to cook and cook for my family and friends, and it's supposed to be more achievable in a home kitchen. But I do feel like I haven't touched upon the cuisine of Sabah and Sarawak. So this whole trip is about discovering their cuisine. And what I come back with is much more than that. They have a cuisine so rich and steeped in culture that I truly wholeheartedly admire. They have the tribes. They use the jungle as their supermarket, you know. I was speaking to a lady and she said, "Oh, I just pop into the jungle and get this." I mean, you don't get this in Semenanjung, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you go into the jungle, you wouldn't know what to eat.
And you might die from randomly foraging mushrooms.
Exactly.
And whatnot.
Yeah. But before I went over there, I know about the tribes. I know about the jungle produce, because you read about these things and a lot of people have been there before. But what I was able to see is they've shown me different cultures over there and how they cook, how they use the jungle to produce. And there are modern traditional restaurant over there that actually promote this kind of cooking and ingredients, which I think is amazing. They make it a little bit more of a comfortable setting, you know, but their food is from how their mom cook it. And their rice, their ingredients and the jungle, that I have a favorite new vegetable called midin.
Oh.
Which if you've tried, everybody probably agree that it is one of the nicest vegetable, and it grows wildly in the jungle. It's like our pucuk, but midin is more tender. It's not slimy and it's so delicious. And you go to the market and they wrap everything in this isip leaf so that there's no plastic involved. And then there is a lot of wild produce out there that they truly champion, you know. So in Sarawak, for example, I met a group of ladies called the Sarawak Heritage Culinary Society. And they basically is a group that is formed representative of the tribe. So they have Bidayu, Kelabit, Iban. And with them, they bring their families and tradition and dishes. And I was shown a table of variety of foods. I mean, it was heaven because they were able to tell me what they are and what the ingredients are. And the ingredients, most of the people in Semenanjung would know.
Mm.
And the flavors and how they make it is incredible. And so it was a learning journey for me. And it makes me think and inspired me in how I can actually use those flavors, transport it and try to make a dish the way they make it. Of course, I can't go into any jungle. So it has to be something that I could replicate it using UK ingredients.
Yeah. I feel like this is definitely an aspect of Malaysian food that I always encounter. Is that when we talk about Malaysian food, it's always the food of Semenanjung, Malaysia, right? And it's really about Sabah, Sarawak. And I feel my knowledge of Malaysian food is also very West Malaysia-centric.
Mm.
Yeah, so, but we'll talk a bit more about the state of the Malaysian food industry in a bit. But I just want to go back to, I guess, your history, your journey. I've seen a lot of videos online or read your book as well. And a lot of your recipes come from, as you say, your home, right? And your mom's sort of cooking. And since the beginning, since your cookbook and opening your restaurant, has this always been the driving factor of your style of cooking?
Yeah, my style of cooking is very simple, but it focuses on flavor and also availability of ingredients. I try, nowadays in the UK, you can get most things from Asia. And some people are even growing it in the UK. You know, you can easily get lemongrass or any of the exotic Asian herbs. But it's always, I always made some dishes based on the availability of ingredients because I don't like importing too much stuff over or using the ingredients that people can't get. I wanted Malaysian food to be accessible. And most importantly, I wanted Malaysian food people can recreate it at home easily in the UK so that people will cook it, they will talk about it and loving it. And from that, people will maybe choose to visit Malaysia and eat the real thing, I call it.
Mm.
But my book is written in a way that for people to discover Malaysia through food, and secondly, for people to reminisce of their holidays or their childhood. And I get a lot of messages saying that this is what I miss now that I can cook it. You know, that makes me happy. Or some people who's never had Malaysian food before and said, this is delicious. I would love to visit Malaysia because now that I've tasted Malaysian food, then I want to discover Malaysia.
Mm.
So it's twofold. So, you know, my mission has always been that, to introduce people to Malaysian food one step at a time.
Mm. Yeah. And since the publication of your cookbook, how else have you been, I guess, spreading the love, spreading the knowledge about Malaysian food?
Every year I come back to Malaysia, there is something new. It could be traditional Malaysian food or modern Malaysian food. So I've been talking a lot on social media. That's one thing. And I host supper clubs so that people can come and eat my food. And also by traveling quite a lot, I gain inspiration on different restaurants and places I've been. And I try to extract that and put it in my food. So the flavors might be Malaysian, but the skills and how I do it and how I present it might be a bit different.
Mm.
So I host a lot of supper clubs to introduce people to a lot more of the flavors of Malaysia. And I try to focus it on things a little bit out there. So not just the normal, traditional Malaysian food. So I always do a mixture.
Kinds of dishes have you put out there that are like, oh, a bit, that's a bit wild?
So my latest creation is a char hispy cabbage. Hispy cabbage, like the pointy cabbage. Mm-hmm. When people say cabbage, it's like not very exciting, but I love vegetables. So I have the more recent supper club. I say to my husband, I want to go a bit crazy. So I did a char hispy cabbage, which I scotched them. And when you scotch and burn the cabbage a bit, it releases sweetness. So the cabbage itself is already very sweet. I serve it with a savory cheesecake that is made out of cream cheese and yogurt and infused with confit garlic. So it's like a garlicky cheesecake. Oh. And on top, I serve with XO sauce.
Oh, okay. So that's where the Malaysian-Chinese part comes
Malaysian-Chinese right. part. Some XO sauce. And also on top, to create texture, I did a sourdough and croutons. So
wow, a cheesecake. I've never had cheesecake with cabbage before.
That's what all my customers say. They say, my supper clubs, when you come, it's completely a mystery. So you don't know what you're eating until you come to the supper club.
Ah, okay. So you don't like publish the menu beforehand or anything?
No, really? I ask for people's dietary requirements. Mm-hmm. And people who are generally up for this kind of thing are always quite adventurous. So when they come, and I always do a welcome speech, I explain a little bit of what the inspiration behind each dish. And I do it every month. And every month they have four dishes. And every month is different. And the feedback has always good. And it's only a small one. It's every supper club is 35 seatings. Mm. Everyone eats together.
Wait, this is not in your house, right? Is it?
No, it's not in my house. Like, I wish 35. I can actually host it in my house for 35, but no. It's in a well-known cafe in Bath. And basically, they open during the day. I take over in the night. Mm. And then we'll pair some wines. And it's an experience like you're dining with a lot of other people. We sit them together, whether they know each other or not. So it's more than a restaurant. It's some place that you can come try different foods and have a bit of a knowledge of what I'm serving. And usually when I talk about the food, some people will nod their head because they know the ingredients. Uh-huh. Or they'll be frowning because they're not sure what I'm talking about. Exactly how I told them about the cheesecake.
Yeah.
In fact, the cheesecake has remained the most successful dish that everybody, not a single person, dislike it. So I love that dish a lot. So I love doing things like that from time to time. So I tell people that the supper club is partly traditional. Sometimes you can get, I serve satay with nasi impit before, followed by, it could be a salad that is a bit wild out there. I can't even remember what I do anymore because every month I do different. Mm. I have to write it down so that I don't repeat it. Or, things that are rendang, for example, is one of my popular dishes. Mm. They love rendang. What's not to love, right?
Yeah.
Rendang.
Other than if it's crispy, then maybe you can go and like it.
Oh, God. Yeah.
We won't go into that. But,
rendang is one of our iconic dishes. I mean, I always tell people, it doesn't look great. You cannot make a rendang look pretty. But it tastes rather good, though. Nobody dislike rendang.
Yeah. I mean, the same can be said for a lot of like brown foods, right? Because the thing about, I love foods that are brown, but visually it rarely looks appealing.
No.
But there's always so much flavor in there. And I guess the brownness comes from a lot of like caramelization oftentimes.
Yes.
And just like the Maillard reaction. So there's a lot of flavor in brown things. And yeah, rendang is definitely top of the
it's
list.
It's hard to make rendang look pretty. And it's hard to make any curries look pretty, you know.
True.
At least with a curry oil or something like that. But it's really hard to make a bowl of chicken curry look beautiful. You know, it's the only way you can do it is with a beautiful bowl.
So this has all been you cooking for other people. But obviously, at home, you have two kids. So I'm sure you cook for them a lot as well. Are your dinners at home as wild?
Yes.
Really?
Actually, they don't get the usual. They do when my husband is cooking. So they have the sausages and the
mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. They actually don't like mac and cheese. They like some spaghetti bolognese. Like most children, right? They have pizza and stuff like that. But we like to be adventurous with them. So my eldest one is like, Mommy is cooking, so it's not going to be like sausages and things like that. She told her dad, like, I prefer your cooking because it's more child-friendly.
She knows what to expect from your husband's cooking.
Yeah, something a bit different for them. So I have an episode where my kids' friends come over. So I say, if you want to have pizza and sausages, please don't come over my place because I don't do that kind of thing. Luckily, they are quite adventurous. So, you know, I will do like crispy chicken pancakes for them. Or once I know these friends doesn't like crazy food, so I did fried rice and crispy chicken for them, and even that she didn't eat and she wasn't welcome again.
No, they're getting so much good food since such a young age, right?
Yeah, so. I like them to try as many things as possible. So I only cook one type of food. I don't cook them their food and cook us our food. We try to eat together every day as much as possible. And I like them to try, you know, Alexa, try butot, which is the sago worm.
This was in Sabah.
Yeah, okay. she tried that and I was very proud of her. You know, she tuck in into those jungle midin and things like that. She loves midin. You know, I like them to try as much as possible. So I try to cook as varied dishes as possible. Don't get me wrong, I still have time where I actually go just have a sandwich, right? But very rarely. And I did it once. My daughter looked at me and she goes, bacon sandwich for dinner? Seriously, mommy? This is how rare it is. So she thinks, what's happening? Why are you serving me sandwiches?
Yeah, you set your expectations too high.
Yeah, but there are times they have junk food. They have, the junk food that they allow, you know, because sometimes you can't, when you're busy, you're busy. And it's completely fine to give them a bit of junk food to make your life easier. And pizzas and things like that. But we try to make our own pizzas at home, which is a little bit more healthier.
Well, we're just going to take a quick break right now. I've been speaking to Ping Coombs, one of the primary pushers of Malaysian food out there in the wider food world. When we return, we'll learn more about Ping's journey and continue to wax lyrical about Malaysian food. Stay tuned. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread, the show where we're pushing for a better representation of Malaysian food with Ping. I'm Jun, and I've been speaking to Ping Coombs, cookbook author and the winner of 2014's MasterChef UK. So, Ping, from the start, we dove straight into Sabahan food and talking about Malaysian food in general, right? And in your cookbook, the book blurb that I've seen online, you always said that, Malaysian food has long... Well, the quote is, Malaysian food has long been the hidden jewel of Southeast Asian cookery, right? And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on why Malaysian food has been so hidden, especially when you compare it with the cuisines of Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore. Why is it that Malaysian food isn't as well known to the international food community?
It's crazy, right? We have such varied foods in Malaysia, and yet it is not as well known. And it's quite hard to push Malaysian food. Although in UK right now, there are a lot of champions of Malaysian food. Or champion of Malaysian flavours. But you're right, we're not as well known for our cuisine as like Singapore or Thailand or Japan or Korea. I boil it down to two facts. We have too much varied food, too much to talk about. You know, when you have too much, you just can't focus on what is what. True. You go to a store and they're so big and you're like, I don't know where to start. I can't focus.
It's almost like we have an identity crisis, right? It's like if you go to a Malaysian restaurant and they serve you like stir-fried veggies and then you're like, this is Chinese.
Yes.
And then they serve you curries with roti and then this is Indian. So how is it Malaysian?
Yeah. So that for people who's never been to Malaysia before, they don't quite understand where it's coming from. Are you Chinese or Indian or Malay? What is Malay food? What is, you know? But because they don't understand we're a multiracial country, that we're so lucky to have these kind of foods. And for us, it's very normal. But for them, they can't focus. They can't, not sure what this is. People like to categorize things, you see. So a lot of countries, I feel like, that are very clever to promote their cuisine, they focus on a few dishes. So as soon as you say tom yum, people know that it's Thai. People know pad Thai is Thai. There's no doubt about it. And people know that, you know. In fact, Thailand has got so much more than pad Thai. But they made it their national dish. In UK right now, we have laksa, obviously, rendang and satay. That's the few dishes that people know that that is Malaysian. And some people even argue that rendang is not Malaysian or satay not Malaysian, but we won't go into that. But we try to hold on to those dishes that is ours, or nasi lemak. But also the second factor, I think, is other countries are simply better at PR. Because I think they focus on certain things and they just put everything they have into marketing that dishes or their culture. I think it's very good. For example, I think it's very clever of Korea to market their culture and their country through food, drama,
music.
And those are the three things that they focus on, you see. They just are so clever about it. And Singapore, these few years in UK, has been very aggressive on their marketing and very clever.
Because they had like a big Singaporean food festival every year or something like that.
Yes, they
and,
have.
Yeah, they had like the world's Asia's 50 best.
They host well. That. They have quite a lot of festivals going on there. And they have just so much, I think, going on there, and also market it to abroad as well. So for the last 2 years, they've brought one of the chefs that have the chicken rice.
I forgot the name. It was the one with the Michelin star, right?
Yes,
the one
that's
star.
Correct. Yeah. And they flew him over, Singapore Airlines and Singapore Tourism Board flew him over to present his chicken rice in the biggest street food in Curb. So it's called Curb Food. And they had a queue for ages. And their tagline is come and try the world's cheapest Michelin star. I mean, who wouldn't queue?
Yeah.
If I'm in London, I'll queue.
That is great marketing, though.
It's amazing marketing, and they will couple it with a lot more other things going on in the background. It's just simply careful planning of marketing and very clever. It's to behold. It's something that I admire about what they have done.
What do you think Malaysians, or actually people in power in Malaysia, can do to bring up Malaysian food in a similar way?
I think nowadays a lot of restaurants in Malaysia has begun to champion more local flavors, but just to twist it a little bit, modernize a little bit. And I think there is something to learn, like going back to my Sabah and Sarawak trip, they really champion their local produce, not just on food. They champion the availability of their produce on crafts, ingredients, music. Here I can see a lot more on the menu featuring local herbs or local ingredients, but modernizing it a little bit for people's palate. Less of championing other cuisines, I think. We have a tendency in this country to champion other people's cuisine. Things from Taiwan or things, something new. Everyone wants to try something new, but in restaurant.
Are you talking about bubble tea specifically?
Oh,
when
my
you mentioned Taiwan.
Oh my goodness. I don't think it's just here. We have a craze in London as well,
but nothing like here.
Yeah, true. Nothing like here. I think in Asian countries, bubble tea has had a second revival. That comes in a magnified scale. But I'm not a fan, but I know a lot of people are. It's just a craze about it. But I think as restaurateurs and chefs beginning to actually see, actually our country has lots of stuff, you know, a lot of ingredients. I once went to a restaurant, I wouldn't tell you who or what or where. It's a fish restaurant. It's by the sea. And when I opened the menu, all the fish are imported. All of it. And I was a bit baffled at the fact that we are by the sea and there are local fishermen and none of the ingredients were anywhere local, or no herbs, no nothing. They're all imported. Imported doesn't mean better.
Yeah.
So I think we should shout more about our cuisine abroad. People who are abroad always shout about it. People that are locally may not, because they have other things to shout about or to try. But I think for us Malaysians, we can shout more about our local ingredients and food and culture to people who are, you know, on social or when talking to friends that are abroad, I think.
Yeah. And as for you personally, do you have any plans in the next few years to further push for Malaysian food out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still learning in a lot of ways. I'm always learning, always pursuing new skills or new, you know, kind of new things that I can further promote Malaysian food. And because I do believe that Malaysia has a lot and we have the most amazing varied food. So the more I learn, the more I will try to promote it through my supper class, my socials, you know, restaurants, and hopefully I'll open more restaurants and venture it out that way. And I won't stop talking about it, basically, to whoever who might want to listen, a few books. And yeah, I'm enjoying what I can do for Malaysian food.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're one of the shining beacons of Malaysian food out there in the world.
I try. I don't think it's a shining beacon, but I do try, along with some other Malaysian chefs out there.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the show today, Ping.
Thank you, Jun.
That's all we have for this week's show. To listen to more episodes, find us on iTunes, Spotify, or visit our website www.bfm.my. And if you're hungry for more funky recipes and food writing, visit junandtonic.com. That's junandtonic.com. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.